Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 18th of July, Anno Domini 2015. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And Steve has his jazz voice on. And I'm Steve Ray.
And we're going to be bringing
you. He does.
And we're going to be. I was that way last week.
Two weeks ago. No, you sounded like death warmed over.
I did.
I'm sorry, buddy. When you called me that Friday night, I seriously was wondering.
I did.
Dave.
That's worse than 25 years.
Sounded like a horror movie called him.
Dave Enright.
Yeah, you know, obscene phone call because I texted you, and I don't know why I did that because I know darn well at that hour you're still up at 11 o'clock.
Oh,
it's
I'm
like. You up? Boom, you called me right away. And
yeah, of course I'm up.
I had to check to see if it was you.
Yeah.
It didn't sound it.
No, that's the truth. Anyway, we're here to bring you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. And before we do that, let us remind you that there are multiple ways that you can enjoy the
scary,
magnificent experience that is Soundbites. You can certainly listen to us directly on this station, Jazz 90.1 FM, or listen live at 901.org, Jazz901.org. Or, of course, you can now watch us on our very own YouTube channel. Links to all three of those are on our website at soundbites.org, so you can pretty easily see what we're doing and how we're doing it. Steve's in the process of getting the YouTube channel up right now, so that'll be up in just a minute or so.
My flash is out of date.
His flash is out of date. There's a shock. Flash needs to die.
Die. That should have died a year or two ago.
Yeah, that's one of our stories, but not the story that's in the poll. So
go for
we'll
it.
Start with just 12 days before its release. Microsoft has finally published its Windows 10 end user license agreement. And the big news is it confirms a feature some feared. Windows 10 updates cannot be stopped. Here's the official line.
Seriously?
The software periodically checks for system and app updates and downloads and installs them for you. You may obtain updates only from Microsoft or authorized sources, and Microsoft may need to update your system to provide you with those updates.
It's a lot of updates.
By accepting this agreement, you agree to receive these types of automatic updates without any additional notice. In short,
be afraid.
Windows 10 will automatically download and install updates, and you have no option to switch them off. Perhaps the biggest point to make about this news is, for most of us, this is a very good thing. Why? Because one of the biggest problems affecting Windows PCs is the risk many run by not being up to date. Most obviously, this regards security patches, but also problems can arise from incompatibilities that stem from out-of-date software and drivers. Now that Windows 10 will have complete control over your PC, this is far less likely to happen. Furthermore, while you can't stop updates indefinitely, you do get to be part the option to be part of the slow or fast rings. The slow ring waits up to a month after updates become available to ease the nerves of anyone worried about missing bugs, missed bugs, while the former, the fast ring, will install updates the moment they become available. Unfortunately, there is a flip side, and that is the complete loss of control. Windows 10's forced automatic updates don't simply cover security patches. They cover anything and everything Microsoft wants to put on your PC as part of Windows 10. This can range from new software and services to changes in core features and functionality. For example, if Microsoft wants to build a new media player, RSS reader, mapping software, cookbook, drone, or self-driving quadricycle into the core of Windows 10, it can and you have to install it. If an update also changes how a feature or service operates to a way you dislike, say a new user interface, then tough! You have to accept that as well. Keep it down in the peanut gallery. Another relevant example is Microsoft pushed Adware as an update to Windows 7 and 8, which created a pop-up advising users to upgrade to Windows 10. This irritated enough users that hacks appeared around the web explaining how to remove that particular update. That won't be possible in Windows 10. If you break the update connection, Microsoft Windows 10 will stop working. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Windows 10 updates can't be stopped. And the choices are, great idea, who cares? Well, that's annoying. They'll hack around it soon. No, they won't. And win what now? So far, we've got, 25 votes, and, that's 27 votes, and, well, that's annoying is, has about half of them, followed by, of course, win what now, followed by who cares, followed by they'll hack around it soon enough, and two of you think this is a great idea.
They must be Mac people.
Right, and of course, I know you'll have a lot more to say about this, so if you head over to the forums, and the easiest way to do that is to slide down the right side of the Soundbites page, scroll down until you see fascinating stuff. The first choice is the forums. The second forum is the poll discussion. And the first or second item on that will be 18 July 15, Windows 10 updates can't be stopped. And of course, we know you have something to say about this, so give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
The only thing I can say?
Yeah.
Linux.
Yes.
Linux, well, or the Google?
Yes, yes. Get yourself a Google Chromebook. That has somewhat the same features. You do get regular updates, but you decide when to install
them.
Yeah,
but the thing that is, though, is, which we've talked about for years, I mean, they're going to do these updates. Here's what's going to haunt them.
Yep.
All right, so they go ahead and do an update. It totally trashes your machine. You're sitting there with an unusable machine,
yep,
and you've got to wait for them to fix the patch that broke your machine to begin with.
And if you're unusable, could take, how do you get it on?
Yeah, and that could take, how long?
Yep.
I mean, we haven't trusted Microsoft from the beginning because they've got a poor track record. I mean, they've made that. It's nothing that the three of us are sitting there coming up with you can't do it. And it's not, we can't say that it's not justifiable because they come out and they'll do stuff and promote you to do this or do that, and then they don't support it or they'll totally do away with it.
Yep.
And then for them to say, we'll do regular updates. You don't do it now. Look at their Windows Defender. That's lucky if that gets updated once every 2 months.
Right. And
some of the problem is that there are millions of old PCs in a closet somewhere just doing one little thing that don't get updated.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are lots and lots of viruses still running around the network grabbing these really, really old machines.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I mean, and let's face it, Windows 7 is still going to be around for a good while, even after Windows 10.
Well, you have 1 year to upgrade. In order to get Windows 10 for free. If you do not upgrade within that year, Windows 10 will no longer be free.
You know what? Some folks that I've been talking to, you know what? They say, fine, I'll ignore that. Let my Windows 7 machine serve me out. And then by then, I'll probably need another machine anyways.
Well, the problem with Windows 7, of course, is that it's already past end of mainstream support.
Yeah.
That ended in January. So unless you are a part of extended support, mm-hmm, which means security updates for everybody, but real support only comes to those who've paid a corporate contract.
Right. But individuals.
Hint, that's not you.
Right. But individuals, they're doing the surfing. This is the perfect opportunity that if you don't want to go to the Windows 10 and be, who else knows what other things are going to shake out with Windows 10 and the way Microsoft is going to control that? Because we've already said it's probably going to be a license that you're going to rent from them. You don't own the software. You're renting it from
them. That's exactly right. They have already said in all of their investor meetings that they are going to a subscription model. It's the only way to make
money.
And
this is where Chromebook is looking. Chrome or Unix.
Chrome or Linux are the things to go.
It's the way to look
at. But people are, you know, people like to pretend that they're too stupid to use those things. You know?
Yeah.
Well, I already know Windows XP, so I'm just going to stick with it because I'm too stupid to learn something new.
No.
No, you're not, actually.
Right.
I have a lot more faith in you than you do.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you figured that out. Well, Chromebook, you can definitely figure that out. There's nothing
to it. It's just a browser.
Yeah, it's just a browser and that. You can do a desktop. You can still use Google Docs and everything else for doing your spreadsheets and everything else. Oh, yes, it's a little bit different than, say, Word or Excel or PowerPoint and all that. Oh, well, you learned those. You can learn this. You've already got the basis. So changing over to do, you know, Google Docs is not that much harder.
Last night during the thunderstorm, I was writing a bunch of stuff, and it didn't in any way bother me that that was happening, because if my machine did die, which it did not, but if it did die, everything was up in the cloud.
Yeah. Yep.
That was not going to be an issue for me. But Windows 7 is off support. That ended on January 13th of this year. Windows 8 mainstream support ends January 9th of 2018. And Windows 10 will be supported until October 13th, 2020. And again, if you have extended support, it's 2025. But remember, unless you're part of a corporation, you don't have extended support. Anyway, to the phones. Our first caller is Steve from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's up?
Yes, I have a problem with something on an operating. I'm running three different operating systems on a computer. I got two Linux versions, one Debian Jesse 8, that newer one they come out with. I got AV Linux and Windows XP. Now, the problem I'm having on the desktop is where the time comes up.
Yeah.
For some reason, they don't synchronize to the same. There's always one that's off by 4 hours. Like, I just tried an AV Linux to adjust it because it was off, and then it throws the Windows XP time off by 4 hours. And it's always just the hours that's different by 4 hours.
Yeah.
And not the minutes or the time stamp for the date. And then if you go into the event log and you look in Windows XP, it's all messed up because of that, too. The time stamp on that for the events is security, where it gives you the time, date stamp on everything.
So which one is off?
It's always off. I keep adjusting, going
which
back.
Which one? You have three operating systems. Which one is off?
Right now, the Windows one is off because I just adjusted an AV Linux. But then when I went over to Windows XP and readjusted that to get the time there, then it threw off the AV Linux one by 4 hours.
Okay, so here's your problem. One of your systems thinks you're on the West Coast.
Okay.
What happens is these days, most operating systems, Win XP is an exception, but most operating systems actually grab the time from the internet if they can. The current time from the internet. And then they adjust it, and that's a universal time, that's a UTC time. And then they adjust it depending on where you've told it you live.
Your time zone.
Your time zone.
Okay.
So what you need to do is to go into each of your three operating systems and make sure that it knows you're in the Eastern time zone.
All right. So one of them must be off.
One of them is off.
Okay.
So if you're 4 hours early, it thinks you're on the West Coast. If you're 4 hours late, it thinks you're in, I think, Greenland.
All right. Yeah, okay. I didn't see that type of adjustment for the time when I went into the settings in AV Linux. It just goes through the dates, and it doesn't ask if you're West. I remember that when you initially put the operating system on.
Yep.
How do you adjust that now from...
Don't know exactly how to do it in AV Linux. But most Linuxes... In Linux, what you do is there's really two methods... that you can use to do that. You can actually go in and change the ETSI local time file, but most of them have a way or the Etsy time zone file. Most of them have a way to do it somewhere from the GUI in the system set up for date and time.
Okay. But all right, I'll look for that.
If you wanted to do it by hand in the slash Etsy file, the ETC directory,
All right.
There should be a file called time zone.
All right.
And for you, if you're living in the Eastern time zone, that should say America with a capital A slash New York, capital N, capital Y, and an underscore between New and York.
Right.
Windows XP, you change it by clicking on the clock and right-clicking on the clock and going into properties. I think you can do that in Linux. It depends on the Linux, and I don't know AV Linux at all. But check all three of your Linuxes of your operating systems, and make sure that all of them are set for U.S. Eastern time.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, good luck. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Give us a call, 585-966-5299, 800-790-0415. We'll be back with a whole lot more of Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And before we go on...
Sounds like he should be on some 1-800 or 1-900.
Leave the gun. Take the cannoli.
We're picking on poor Steve because how can we politely say...
You know what, though? He came in. God love
yeah,
him.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Hey. You know, we suck it up and come in and...
Yep.
God love you, buddy.
Before we go on, Steve, that we talked to on the phone just a few minutes ago, I didn't get to the point where the easiest way to change it in a graphical user interface method on Linux is click on the time on your machine. It should bring up a calendar, and at the bottom of that calendar should be time and date settings. Again, I don't know AV Linux all that well, but most of them work in a similar way. So from there, you can pick your time zone and set it that way. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ray from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Ray. What's up?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
One thing, isn't it a 3-hour difference between the coast? You were saying 4?
Yeah. I'm okay. On drugs. Well, it depends. It depends on whether or not, well, to the coast, yeah. But I forget, it's a completely different thing to Arizona. My daughter's going to college in Arizona, so I have...
And UK is 5 hours, except if they're on summertime.
Yeah.
Anyway, I got that Avast free antivirus.
Yeah.
And when I do a home network security scan... It says, congratulations, your network is well secured, your router is configured correctly, your devices are not visible from the Internet. But then, if you scroll down, it says there's 4 devices connected to my network. One, obviously, is the router, which is Netgear.
Right.
But the other 3 are, for instance, Samsung Electromechanics Company Limited. And
that's probably your cell phone. You have a Samsung cell phone?
I don't even know. Hold on.
Yeah, you're very surprised when you look.
No, I have an LG.
Okay.
There's another one that says Aztec Computer Inc. And they give you all the IP addresses too.
Right. Okay. Here's the thing. First, you should have at least 3 devices. Right.
Okay.
There's your router.
Right.
There's the connector to the internet from either your cable company or DSL or fiber or wherever you're getting your connection.
Right.
There's your computer itself. And then that 4th one If you have, as Steve said, a phone or a tablet or a printer, if it's a wireless printer, it, you know, any wireless device on your network. So the first thing to do is figure out what all your devices are.
Okay.
And go and find their addresses.
Okay.
Right. And then keep a list. And then see if there is indeed something else on your network. Now, don't forget, the home security scan will simply tell you whether or not there are any viruses on your network or any Trojans or any of that stuff. If someone has been given or figured out your router's password and gotten on your network, that looks like a good connection to the software because they didn't break in using something that that Avast can detect.
Right, right.
And so, many times the brand that it identifies there, like that Aztec, that's the chipset of the company that made the Ethernet controller.
Right.
That may not be the brand of the device that's actually there.
Okay. See, that's what's throwing me off.
Right.
Know,
so what you need to do is check. You know, you can find the IP address on all of your devices. Write them down, check them off against that list. Keep that list handy, and then every once in a while, take a look at what's on your network, and you'll be able to tell whether or not it's something you know or something new.
Okay.
Okie
doke. Okay. It just concerned me a little bit. I'm going, wait a minute.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, guys. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks.
Good work. Bye-bye.
Thank you. One of the other things that some people do, some routers, generally the slightly more expensive ones, will let you set who can and can't get on your network.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go in and say, oh, this MAC address, the machine access code, I think is what it's called. It's the code that identifies your Ethernet card, right? Every device has a MAC address.
Right.
So you can go into the router and say, only this list of MAC addresses can connect to this router. And then it doesn't matter really what else you've got going on. It will reject anybody, which also means then if you buy a new device, you have to go in and set that MAC address. But that's even more secure. Get a good password on you. For God's sake, change the admin password.
Yes, that is one thing that folks overlook so much.
Yep.
You know, they go ahead and set it up and say, okay, I'm secure. Yep, I've got it's got a password on there, and nobody can get into my network without using a password. Well, if it's a generic one for the administrator, they can come in the back door,
right,
get into your router, switch everything around, and they're on it, and you're locked out.
Everybody knows the default passwords for every device.
Yep.
They're out there all over the internet. So the first thing you do when you buy a device, if you read the directions, which I know you did not, but if you had read the directions, read the fine manual. One of the first things it tells you is change the admin password. So once you've done that, and make it a good one. For Pete's sake, this is the number one point of vulnerability for your network. So
and that's
don't
all the computers
ABC.
That are on that network, too, though.
Right, right, right.
That's what they got to
realize. For your whole network. So don't use 123456. That's the same password I have on my luggage. So be very hard with that one. And then, you know, that one you can keep written down somewhere very secure.
Well, think of it as, though, here's what I tell folks to do. Because nobody's going to be in your house anyways. When you set up your admin password, write it down, tape it to the bottom of the router. Nobody can come in and look underneath your router for the password.
Right.
So if you've got it taped in, you know, the bottom of that, and you forget it because you've got so many other passwords, this is one that you can securely have laying around, and 99% of the time, nobody's going to see it.
Right,
because nobody goes down and, you know, flips the router over and looks for it.
Well, now they all will because you told them to.
Yeah, but how many are going to do it?
Right, but reality is, in some way, protect your router with a really good password. Your machine should also be protected with really good passwords, particularly if they're laptops and you take them places. because once you're off your own network, all bets are off. But the first thing to do is to secure your own network. As we were saying to Ray, every router will tell you who's connected to
mm-hmm.
it.
There's a
place in the router.
Yeah.
You can see that. And again, check. I've got, you know, my daughter has a laptop. My wife has a laptop. I've got a desktop. I've got a tablet. We've all got phones. And so I can have, you know, a half a dozen devices.
Getting into the router is not a hard task to do.
Right.
And, you know, some folks, oh, I'm afraid to go in there. I'm going to mess something around. Well, you know what? The beauty of it is you're opening it up in a browser. And if you think you've done something wrong, you can always exit out of the browser because it's not right. going to save any changes. You actually have to hit the save or, you know, continue right. button.
I tell people all the time, as long as you don't hit the save button,
you're good.
You haven't made a change.
Right. You can make right. all the changes you want. And all of a sudden, if you just close out of your browser, which shuts it down, anything that you did to that router is negated.
Right. Because it wasn't saved.
Yeah, exactly.
As long as you don't save it. So you got to, you know, you go in and you set it up and you look every once in a while and you see what's on your network. There are lots of ways to do that. If you're a Linux user, there are utilities under Linux that will do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
There are Windows utilities you can buy that do the same thing. But check your network fairly regularly because one of the things you have to remember is that wireless is radio and it doesn't stop at the walls of your house. And particularly if you've gotten a high-powered one. So, for example, my wife wants to be able to listen to the radio on her iPod when she's in the backyard
mm-hmm.
gardening, which means I had to put up a fairly powerful signal,
right.
which means if you're sitting in my driveway or on my porch, you can get to my Wi-Fi.
Same with me. On my front porch, I can sit there with my tablet, tap into it. But if you're going by, you ain't getting in.
Right, right. And so, in fact, I know you can sit out in the street and do it. So I can see my the guy across the street.
Oof.
I can see his wireless, and I could get in if I...
That's the scary part, is we could ride around the city, more places with a tablet. And, you know, because of the apps on there, sniff out Wi-Fi and find out more opened networks or ones that are very easy to get into. And here's the thing, and not to scare you folks, but yeah, I do want to scare you. All right, if you don't take the time to lock down your network, you're putting yourself in danger. Because here's what happens. Somebody else could come along, sit in your driveway, and you wouldn't notice it. And if they tap into your network and say they're downloading music or movies or anything else, it's coming across your network. You're going to get blamed. So you can sit there until the cows come home and say, no, I didn't. It's coming across your IP address because it's coming through your router. And I don't care. They're just going to sit there and say, sorry, it came through here. And sorry, you're going to get fined.
We'll confiscate all your computer equipment and figure it out later.
Yep, exactly. You're guilty until proven innocent. And that's just the way it's going to go. So take the time. It's really not that hard to go into a router and change it up. Very easy to do, and it's worth every penny of it, because especially if somebody gets in there and starts stealing sensitive information.
And most of the routers come with setup instructions on how to do all this that no one ever bothers
with. Well, that's the other thing. You know, folks don't...
You plug it in and it works with default passwords.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Randall Munroe, I think, said it best. He is a guy who creates an online... cartoon called XKCD, and he once said, we need a special holiday to honor the countless kind souls with unsecured networks named Linksys.
That's the truth.
Because if you just take a Linksys router, or really, he singled out Linksys, it doesn't matter.
Right, Netgear, they're all guilty.
You take anybody's router out of the box, plug it in, and turn it on, it comes up with an open network named... the company,
mm-hmm.
right? So you can see it. You can see it all around. Drive around, and there are there's a thing called war driving. Look it up. My friend Fred started this craze years and years and years ago. You can go around war driving and picking up
for the open, list of wide open, yeah, open networks, free networks,
right.
Unsecure. And
Google is said to have done it when they were driving their mapping. Mapping. Yeah, that's part of what people got angry about.
Well, no, they got no right to be angry if they're going to go have a network up and not secure it. That's your stupid mistake. I'm sorry. You don't want to take the time to do that. It's just like they don't want to take the time to back up their pictures and documents and everything else. And then they come crying, oh, but I need to get this back. Well, where's your backup? I didn't get time. Sorry.
Well, that's exactly right. We need to start taking a little responsibility for our own security and our own backups. And the only way to do that is to get into it and do this stuff. All right, listen, we're going to take another break. Give us a call, 585-966-5299, 800-790-0415. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Dave Enright, Steve Ray, and Nick Francesco on Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And you can call us at 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. I did not hear of anybody losing power after last night's display.
Yeah, no, that was quite a rumble of thunder there, and unbelievable.
As my wife said, it sounded like bad movie thunder. You know, it was way too much thunder, way too much lightning.
Well, it woke me up out of a dead sleep, and then I rolled over, and you know, you could see the flashes of lightning, and it was like,
I actually got up because there were so many, mm-hmm. and they were so regular, I thought it was some sort of emergency vehicle out on the street.
Uh-huh.
And I looked out, and I realized at that point that it was so regular.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, this summer has been totally wacky. As you and I were talking before the show, you know, I mean, I planted a garden this year. It's the first time I've done it over the place I'm at now. And it's been unbelievable because I've got, you know, tomato plants and all that type of stuff, and they're taking off like gangbusters, and I haven't had to water them once.
Yep, yep, yep.
The temperatures-wise, you know, it's not been that hot. You know, we haven't had the blistering 90-degree days, you know, right. constantly and all that. The cool evenings, and the rain, it's been just ideal.
Yeah, as I said to Elaine, I said, one night I went to sleep in the backyard, looked like winter, and the next day it was lush.
Yeah.
It was just full of everything. Everything had bloomed overnight. It was amazing.
Yeah, the lawns and everything are so green. It's been great.
Well, we've talked a little bit about Flash. Steve had a Flash issue earlier. After Monday's news that Facebook's new chief security officer wants to set a date to kill Flash once and for all, the latest version of Firefox now blocks Adobe's vulnerability-riddled software by default. Mark Schmidt, the head of Firefox support team at Mozilla, tweeted that all versions of Flash Player are blocked in the browser as of its latest update, accompanying the news with an image showing a raised fist and the phrase, "Occupy Flash." Schmidt later clarified that while, or maybe that's some sort of slash fiction for the comic book. Anyway, Schmidt later clarified that while the software was blocked in the latest version of Firefox, Mozilla will enable support for Flash's default for its browser when Adobe releases a version that isn't being actively exploited by known vulnerabilities. The company had previously blocked Flash, Java, and a range of other plugins and software when they were found to have security holes. Schmidt also noted that Firefox users can still choose to enable Flash in the settings menu if they wish. Dislike for the software isn't new. Steve Jobs memorably explained his problems with Flash in an open letter published back in 2010, but it somehow clung doggedly to life, barely surviving the discovery of multiple critical security vulnerabilities every year. Most recently, 400 gigabytes of files uncovered in the hacking team leak revealed that some serious flaws in Flash that the spyware company used to force their way into target computers. Adobe has scrambled to fix problems as they have become public, but the web's biggest companies have slowly withdrawn support from the software over the past few years. YouTube dropped Flash's default player in favor of HTML5 in January. The new stuff is all HTML5. The old stuff is still Flash. And Chrome now intelligently pauses instances of Flash video on its pages. Even Adobe dropped active development of Flash Player for mobile in 2011, recognizing it as inferior to HTML5. Chrome actually uses its own version of Flash, which is not subject to any of the vulnerabilities that real Flash has. This latest wave of anti-Flash action might not kill it immediately, but it should at least mark the beginning of the end for the software. So our question to you, do you still like Flash? Why? And what will it take to kill it?
It's a good TV program.
It's a good TV program. I like the comic.
Yeah.
Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
At this point, it's mostly inertia. You got millions of Flash programmers writing millions of Flash web pages, and they're going to have to learn something new.
Well, but it's always been problematic. I mean, if you go to Google and you say, where does my page rank?
Mm-hmm.
It does not see Flash. It has never seen Flash. So you can have the coolest looking page in the world and people can't search for it because Google can't see Flash. And yet we still see Flash on web pages all over the place. As if that were useful.
Yeah, like not.
We see. I have turned off Flash on all my devices.
Same here.
Chrome, I let it because, like I said, it uses its own version of Flash
and updates itself as it needs it.
And it updates mm-hmm. itself as it needs it
with a working one.
Yep. But I don't. If I go to a web page and it says, "Oh, you need to watch this in Flash," no, I don't.
No,
I'm done now. Bye bye. I'll go to another website. Yeah. I don't
not
need
today,
Flash.
Not, no.
I don't need to talk to people who do Flash. I just don't care anymore. HTML5 does everything Flash does faster, easier, mm-hmm. lighter weight. It doesn't bog down your machine like Flash does. And it's much more secure. So Flash really needs to die. And we need to help it. I know a lot of people still use it. I know a lot of people invested a lot of time and money and effort learning to program in it, and I'm sorry for you, but
hey, that's
really
no.
Junk.
That's just like anything else in our world, you know. As far as computing, it doesn't stay the same. It's always moving and looking for bigger and better ways of doing things.
Yep,
and that's been the way since the first, you know, trash 80s and everything else when we were programming. Always trying to find something that will do it faster, easier. And nothing, well, going back to old zip files, remember having to put together, if you wanted to do up a batch file, you had to get all the programs in one folder and then run the zip program, selecting all those files, pack it up, and then make a package or unzip them.
Yep.
I mean, that was a pain in the butt because it had to open up, say, 70 files or whatever, and then you had to run it. Well, now zip, that's also changed that you can just sit there, grab the zip file, the folder's there, you can go in there and tell it auto-run. It's done.
Yep.
So a lot of stuff has changed for the better, and it's just, like you said, I feel bad for the folks that did learn Flash, but this is progress, and it's got to move on.
And look at the hacking team people, 400 gigabytes worth of files from their stuff, and many of them were Flash hacks.
Yeah.
And what happened was, for example, the first one that came to light on a Monday. The first exploit for it was seen on a Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Adobe patched it on a Wednesday. That's a 24-hour window where tens of thousands of machines were taken over.
At a minimum.
I mean, and then the second time it happened, pretty much the same sort of thing. The second vulnerability came out as soon as the first one was patched on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Adobe confirmed it on Friday.
Patched it.
and patched it later on in the weekend. So, and this is, you know, it's Flash. So it affects Windows, it affects Macs, it affects Linux. There's no hiding from this. If you use Flash, that vulnerability exists. Now, there are some ways, obviously, you know, you have to be intelligent about this. For example, Steve is recording the show on YouTube. And right now, apparently, that's still using Flash.
Yeah, apparently.
Apparently it is. But we know it's coming from Google itself. Mm-hmm. We know that it's okay.
Yeah, it's reliable.
It's reliable. So, you know, that is what it is. But when you go to these places and play these things and look at Flash stuff, mostly we're talking about the ads that you find on websites.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to create a Flash ad that contains the hacks for these vulnerabilities, and just look, just browsing to a website can give you that vulnerability exploited on your machine. And you know, we see them in Google ads, we see them in all kinds of places, ads. Places, you know, most of these ad sites will tear them down as soon as they find them.
Yeah.
But they get millions of advertisers every day, and sometimes they're a little behind in catching them. So you need to take responsibility for your own stuff and maybe just turn off Flash in your machine. And you'd be surprised at the number of websites that suddenly aren't very useful.
Or a lot of them just automatically switch to HTML5 because they see you don't have Flash.
If they do, then you win. And you can do that easily enough by uninstalling Flash from your machine entirely.
In fact, the Flash update notices are so common and, oh God, not another one, that the bad guys have started putting out fake Flash update notices because people are used to seeing them and clicking OK.
Yep. I haven't used Flash. You know, and like you say, there's nothing that important that I got to see through Flash.
Right. If I want to, you know, view a website, nowadays everybody wants me to view video. As opposed to giving me information, I'm a very fast reader. So I can catch the information on a website and be gone onto something else really quickly. Or I have to sit through, and now we're about to show you some really interesting stuff that somebody said. Just show me the text. Let me read the text and move on. Instead of spending 5 minutes watching the video, I can spend 30 seconds reading the page and be gone. But it is what it is, and it's the way they do things, and I get that. But the reality is that because of that Flash vulnerability, I've gotten rid of Flash, so I don't even see it. You know, I go to a website, and that's just someplace I leave now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's like you say, it's more of a pain in the butt and not needed. Because
there's a whole bunch of Flash vulnerabilities that this hacking team they've got a product called Remote Control System, their RCS system.
Okay.
And basically they sell it to people to take over a network full of machines, right? To take over other people's machines.
Mm-hmm.
And many of their exploits are in Flash, and many of them have not yet been patched. So Adobe is essentially going down the list. There's 400 gigabytes of these files. Adobe's going down the list one at a time, one at a time, one at a time. All I have to do is skip to the middle of the list and start exploiting that one. It'll be months before they get to it.
Yeah.
I just turned off Flash, and you should probably do the same.
Yeah, no.
Just uninstall it. Just go into your ad remove programs and remove Flash.
Well, I've got, you know, the iTunes on there, of course. You know, it wants to throw Flash in with that, too. You know? And I just say no. There's nothing. I'm sorry, iTunes. I don't need to see those other ads and all this other stuff through Flash.
That's right.
I use iTunes because I love to have my music there. It's safe because I've got it backed up, and I can make my own playlist and burn it to a CD so I can enjoy it in my car. But No, I'm not going to listen to view stuff through Flash just right. because that's what they want to tie into. It's like, no, get over it. Ain't happening.
I've been playing with Google Music and Google Movies and all that stuff.
Oh, okay.
And what is interesting is every once in a while, Google will give away a free movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got, matter of fact, the latest Transformer one.
Yep, got the latest Transformer, got yep. the original Lord of the Rings. There was some kids movie that came out just yesterday or the day before.
I want to go see that Minion. You and I were talking about
that. Yeah,
we
were.
I have not seen any of them, but for some reason, this one has caught my eye, and it's like, I got to go see it just for the heck of it.
My daughter and my sister-in-law went. My daughter liked it. My sister-in-law is a Minion. Is Minion crazy. She couldn't get enough of it. She would have sat through it four times.
Yeah, well, I was with a friend this morning, and we had breakfast at McDonald's.
Oh, yeah.
And they're all wearing these hats, and, you know, Minions are all
They're everywhere.
But
yeah.
the ads for it are so darn cute. And even the folks posting stuff, you know, on Facebook and there for the Minions. They just such...
They've got a hit on their hands.
Yeah, they've got a unique character that, you know, is really very unusual. And
yep.
Very entertaining.
Yep. But so do something about Flash on your system. Turn it off. At the very least, just turn it the heck off. All right. That music tells me you've wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense. But don't worry, you're going to get the opportunity to do it again. Because while we are going to take a slightly longer break, we'll be back with a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. And it's hot and it's muggy and it's going to rain out there. So sit around with in front of your radio with your feet up and a hot toddy and the air conditioning.
Air conditioner blowing on you.
Exactly. And stay tuned for a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. We'll be right back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. Give us a call, 966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. It's Soundbites and the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
We are?
And, this is really my favorite story of the week. The White House, no, I love this story. The White House wants to close a homework gap in which poor students can't get online. One new solution is free Google Fiber. Google will bring free high-speed internet to public housing projects in select cities as part of a larger initiative by the Obama administration to ensure low-income Americans are not left behind in an era when more and more everyday tasks require getting online. Today, in all of our Google Fiber markets, we're launching a program to connect residents in select public and affordable housing properties for $0 a month with no installation fee, Google announced on its Fiber blog. Google Fiber is now available only in a handful of markets, including Kansas City, Provo, Utah, and Austin, Texas. But the company plans to expand soon to other cities such as Portland and Phoenix. The company did not say how many individual households will be covered by the new public housing program, which will be available in every city where Google Fiber is offered. Google also said that it will provide digital literacy programs to assist people who may lack basic computer skills or who are unfamiliar with the internet. The company claims that an early trial of the program in Austin's Manchaca Village has proved popular. More than 90% of eligible people signed up for the service, and half of the residents completed a training program. The larger Obama administration initiative is called Connect Home, and will reportedly cover 275,000 households in 27 cities and one tribal area. The White House says the program is intended to address a homework gap in which poorer students may not be able to keep up in school because they lack reliable internet access. As the Wall Street Journal reported in 2014, thousands of low-income students currently rely on Wi-Fi and McDonald's to do their schoolwork. Fiber internet, which provides lightning-fast speeds, is popular, but is only available in select parts of the country, and pricing is uneven. A new Comcast fiber offering, listen to these prices. A new Comcast fiber offering will cost between $159 and $300 a month, plus installation fees. They all have installation fees. Google Fiber offers a offers gigabit speeds for about $70 a month. Here in Rochester, Greenlight is $50 a month for 100 megabits of download, 20 megabits of upload, $75 a month for 500 meg down and 50 meg up, and $100 a month for gigabit down and 100 megabits up. So, is fiber in your future, or are you using it today? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And I have to be honest, I love this idea. I love the idea that they're going to give lower income housing people free internet access, probably at the 300 megabit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the low end of their setting.
Yeah.
But
it's better than a poke in the eye with a sharp stick.
Right, even if it's 30 megabytes, 10 megabits. It's not going to cost them anything, and they'll be able to keep up with doing their homework and everything else. So many places you can't apply for a job except online now. You can't apply for any sort of aid except online now. You need to be online to do your homework, to get your homework assignments. Anybody who cannot afford to have internet at home, like it says, often we find that these people are spending their time.
Host.
Well, they're spending their time in free Wi-Fi places like McDonald's or Starbucks or one of those places in order to. That's you, whatever that is, that's you. Anyway, back to the phones. Our next caller is Roger from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Roger. What's up?
Hi, Nick. Got a couple questions. One of them falls right into what you just asked about with the fiber optic in my future.
Yeah.
My Time Warner just went up $12 a month because the promotion is over.
Yeah.
And I want to save $8 a month by dumping their modem.
Yeah.
Have you got any recommendations? And I do plan on going with fiber optic as soon as they get around to Irondequoit.
Yeah. You and kind of everybody else. Right now, Time Warner has on their website, and Steve is looking it up. Time Warner has on their website a list of the modems that you can buy to take care of that. And
the Motorola 6121 is usually the most common one to purchase. It's under $100 and it supports the DOCSIS 3.
Right. So it's the Motorola, it's called the Surfboard. It's the SB6121.
Okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say you can buy that at Amazon or locally at one of the box stores.
Okay, my other question, Windows 10, is there going to be a clean install available?
Yes.
I hate upgrades because then whatever ragged edges you have on your registry or anywhere else in your machine, you're taking with you to the new OS.
Yes, but that will cost you money.
Okay, I can't just download a version of Windows 10 and then use my 8.1 license.
No. What you can do is either download it in C2, right in the middle of your machine, or if you want to buy a copy, you'll be able to buy it on DVD or for the first time ever on a USB flash drive. But those will cost you money. Windows 10 Home will be $120 and Pro will be $200, That's for the USB card. If you want the disc, it's actually $20 more. $140 for... wait a minute. No, that's backwards. Oh, no, the discs are cheaper. That does make sense. The pro version is $140.
Okay, so then my safest bet is probably to just go ahead and back up everything, wipe 8.1, reinstall it so it's at least fresh, and then upgrade.
That's probably your best bet, yeah. There's really no easy way to do this. And you're absolutely right. What Roger is saying, folks, is that as you use Windows, cruft builds up in the registry. Just junk that's left behind over and over and over again in the registry. Worst idea in computing ever. Ever. And consequently, when you upgrade, it doesn't wipe out the registry. It just brings all that cruft along with it.
Yeah, more bloatware.
Right, more junk in your system. So what Roger is saying is when you do a clean install, of course, you have none of that. You have a clean registry. No problems get carried along. So what he's suggesting is back up everything twice so you know you've got a clean copy somewhere. Wipe out the machine. Install 8 fresh so that the registry is as clean as it possibly gets. Then the very next thing you should install is Revo One Installer and then do the upgrade. Makes sense, Roger.
Yeah, it's more work, but it in the long run, it's better than repairs down the road.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, Nick, thanks a lot.
Good luck on getting your modem, and good luck on getting green light in your neighborhood.
Yeah, well, that, and good luck in getting Windows 10 and hoping it actually is going to function on my phone and my computer seamlessly.
Yeah. Your phone will be about a month behind your desktop, by the way.
Uh-huh. Because I played with Windows 10, and all Windows 10 reminds me of is it reminds me of the 8.1 that's on my phone.
Yeah.
It's almost like having, a phone on my monitor.
Yep.
Even more so than 8.1.
Yep. I completely agree.
Well, is Classic Shell going to work with 10? You got any idea?
Nobody knows yet. I haven't seen any information about that at all. But 10 really is kind of Classic Shell. The only time you see the Metro interface is when you bring up the start menu.
Right. The thing I like about Classic Shell, though, is, for instance, if I want to go to... yeah, good. Now I'm drawing a blank here. Where everything is. Let me click on it here.
The program menu?
No, if I want to go, for instance, to Control Panel...
Mm-hmm.
With Windows, I've got to click Control Panel and open it. With Classic Shell, as soon as I roll my cursor over Control Panel, it pops out a side menu on the right with everything in Control Panel in alphabetical order.
Right.
So, I mean, it is kind of a superior start menu. But
right.
I guess, if life was easy, we could all just be rich instead of good-looking. So,
exactly.
Thanks for your help today.
Doggone it. Well, by the way, that Windows 8 has a keyboard shortcut for the control panel. Now I just have to remember what it was. Windows X. Hold down the Windows key and mm-hmm. type X.
Okay.
And the control
panel. I have to wait for control panel to open.
Well, no. What that does, there's two ways. Windows X... opens a whole list of things, one of which is the control panel, and the other is control I, which opens the charms menu, and the control panel's in there. There's nothing I know of that directly opens the control panel.
Okay, well, two more shortcuts to write up on my monitor till I memorize them.
There you
okay.
go.
Okay, thanks a lot, Nick.
Yep.
All right, bye-bye.
Yeah, there are a bunch of keyboard shortcuts, and they're all available, but yeah, what Roger's talking about there is... with the program he's got, he rolls over the thing and all the control panel choices just show mm-hmm. up right in front of you.
Anytime you mention keyboard shortcuts.
Yeah.
What does that
you think of Esther?
Yeah. Every time we hear that term, for you folks that don't know, back at a long time ago when we first started Sound Bites, We had this lovely lady, she has since passed, was our board op. And Esther Vail was one beautiful woman.
She really was.
And she, I got her a keyboard because I was just starting the business up, and I got her this keyboard. And it had all these extra function keys. Well, she wound up having a heyday doing all these shortcuts, so she didn't have to do all this typing. All she had to do was a shift in this one, and it would do this, and a shift or a control key in that one, and it'd do this and that. She was like a pig in mud. She
loved it.
She was the queen of shortcuts.
Every time we came in, every single time, she'd say, "You want to see my new shortcut?"
Yes. Oh,
sure,
yeah.
Sure, Esther. Of course we do.
She was a doll.
She was a sweetheart. And yeah, those are... in fact, I might as well read this news item while we're sitting here.
Go for it.
Good news, PC home builders. If you're busy constructing a new tower for Windows 10 and on the fence about whether or not to take up a slot with a DVD drive, here's a little tidbit you should know about. You'll be able to purchase a retail copy of Windows 10 on a USB drive. Yay, hooray. Amazon currently has a pre-order page up for Windows 10 Home that ships on a USB flash drive. The bad news is the item is currently listed as shipping on August 30th, nearly a month after Windows 10 starts rolling out on July 29th. Actually, over a month, that would be, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. That's been Microsoft's modus operandi for recent Windows releases, however, so it shouldn't come as too much of a surprise. As Microsoft tipped in June, the retail version of Windows 10 Home is selling for $120. There's also a Windows 10 Pro USB drive selling for $200. In addition to the USB sticks, Amazon is also listing disk-based versions of Windows 10 Home Builder OEM to sell for a little bit cheaper and ship earlier than the USB drives. The Windows 10 Pro Home System Builder OEM disk is priced as $140 and ships on August 5th, while the basic Home OEM disk is just $100 and also ships on August 5th. The big difference between the USB drives are retail versions, and the system builder version is that Microsoft offers support for the retail builds. If you try and install the OEM version on a PC, you are on your own. The theory is they are for original equipment manufacturers like Dave and Steve, who they will then provide support to the end user customer. If you do it on your own, you cannot get help from Microsoft. There are also many other differences that I won't go into here, but you can find comparisons all over the web. If you're looking to pick up retail versions of Windows 10 to install on a fresh machine, you can pre-order now from Amazon. Just make sure you note the shipping date and the differences between regular retail versions and the home builder system disks. Remember, the retail version gives support. The OEM versions do not. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Bill from Rochester, New York on the line. Welcome, Bill. What's up?
Hi, Nick. How are you?
Peachy, how are you?
Oh, good. Thank you. I just wanted to ask you guys a quick question around Chromebooks.
Yeah.
I was listening earlier about the flash and all that, and Chrome was mentioned a few times. And one of the reasons I went to a Chromebook was for security, obviously, and I have purchased one. It's an Acer. It's got the Celeron, but it's only got 2 gigabytes of RAM, and it does good unless you open a lot of tabs, you know?
Right.
Now, my wife has pretty much hijacked it on me, so I'm going to...
We warned you things like that could happen.
Yeah, so I'm going to need to get, like, another version for myself. And I thought to improve the speed in the future, I didn't know if a quad core. I noticed there's some different types of quad cores available, and not just like an i3 with hyperthreading and all that, but also there's Targus or something like that is an actual quad core. Or if I could stay with a Celeron dual core and just get like the 4 gigabytes of RAM, would that do the trick? I was just curious. which way would you go? Because I know you're kind of an expert on Chromebooks.
Well, I am.
One key thing, though, he's got to do, this one is the one he had was already confiscated.
Yeah.
Whatever one you decide on that comes into the house, do not let them know that it's a better machine than you've got, because guess what? They're going to swap.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
So, you know, as long as they're not listening.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Oh, no, she's not.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're good.
Here's the deal. Okay. I actually own two Chromebooks. One is a Toshiba with 2 gig of RAM, and the other, and they both have essentially the same Intel processor on them. The i5 or whichever one it is, and an HP with 4 gigs of RAM. Honestly, I generally have 8, maybe 9 tabs open at once. I don't notice a difference between them. They're both super fast for me. I don't know what, I don't know how many tabs you have open.
Uh-huh.
That it slows things down or what it is you're looking at. But right now I've got 2, 4, 6, 8 tabs open, and one of them is the YouTube channel and stuff like that. I'm not even seeing a slowdown. But I will say this. Certainly more RAM is better. And so unless all of the tabs you have open have some sort of active, like you're playing YouTube or music or something on each one of them, then the amount of RAM you have is more important than the speed of the processor or the number of cores.
Okay.
So I would say get a 4 gig machine. I would say a dual core should be fine. A quad core, of course, would be better. But significantly better, I'd have to say no.
Okay.
The Chromebook is fast as it is, optimized for the smaller environment that it's in, and should be just fine.
Yeah, that's a pretty neat little setup. I like it.
Well, and I'm glad. I'm finding that, you know, it depends on the individual's use pattern, right? Mm-hmm. And it depends on how they do what they do. So, for example, my daughter, she's an art historian. She has huge files of art on her machine. She can't use a Chromebook. She just can't. That's never going to happen. But for me, I do a lot of writing, I do a lot of surfing, I do a lot of email, all of that, and I do a lot of spreadsheets, I can do all of that in a Chromebook, and it's cheap, and it's fast, and if somebody were to steal it, or I drop it and break it, I honestly, honestly don't care.
I agree with you on that, and the other thing that I like is the fact that all my files now, I use the Google Apps, and you know, the On the drive, the Google Drive.
Yep.
So disk space is almost like not even a worry.
No, and because, like I've said time and time again, if you're using Google Drive to store your data, and you store it in the Google format, well, that is to say you're using Docs or Sheets or Presentation, it does not count against your space. I've got 15,000-plus documents up in Google Drive, and I'm using less than a gig of space, and that's a couple of large PDFs and a movie. The documents that I create don't count against the space. It's a beautiful thing, and it means that I have. And last night, when we were in the middle of the light and sound show that was going on all night, I was happily writing away, not a problem at all.
Yep.
Because I knew all of that stuff was actually being stored on Google servers, and if, in fact, my machine lost power, I didn't lose any information. Did we lose you, Bill?
Yeah, we did.
Bill?
No, we lost him.
Oh, we lost Bill. Sorry, Bill. But yeah, I'm telling you, I again, it depends on your use pattern.
Well, I play a lot of games, and I can't.
Well, okay, then you can't have a Chromebook. Don't yell at me about it.
You know, one other thing that brings up a point, and I had a customer, and last night's thunderstorm's a good example. You know, you can lose power, and some folks say, well, you know, I got a backup generator. I don't have to worry about that, because seconds later, you know, it'll kick in.
Yeah, too late.
I'm sorry. If you lose power, and you've got your computer on, without a UPS, it could get damaged. Yeah. I'm sorry. It's nice. And yeah, it's convenient. You know, these folks are getting into these big generators and, you know, they're pushing them left and right, which it's great. So you're not, you know, say on a cold winter month, you know, without power for a day or two, like when we had the ice storm or some of the other storms that we've had come rolling through. But if you're in the middle of the afternoon or evening and the storm comes rolling through and you lose power, granted it's only maybe a minute or two before your generator kicks in, but you know what? That's 1 to 2 minutes too long that anything that you were working on your computer is gone and it can cause damage. So if you are doing sensitive stuff, especially these folks that work from home, a lot more folks are doing that now, or backing up, you know, doing other documents, schoolwork, or whatever, if this is going to be important to you,
right,
also have a UPS. UPSs are great. They will take their time and slowly give you the time to, even though the house is totally black, you could have your PC, whether it's a desktop or a laptop, on a UPS, and most of them will give you up to, I think the smallest is like 20 minutes to right. slowly shut things down and close down the computer, and everything is safe.
Basically, the more you spend, the more time you get.
Exactly.
But you really only need a minute in order to do a manual shutdown,
yeah,
a normal power shutdown,
yes,
so that all your data is safe.
So you can get a low-end one. Just to do it. And the other beauty about it is if you're also one of these folks like myself, leave my computer on all the time, there is a routine within it. So if it loses power in the middle of the night, there's a routine in a lot of the UPSs, like Steve was saying, depending on how much money you spend, that will automatically, that it senses that the power is off because it's not being charged, and it will safely shut your machine down for you.
Right.
We had a gentleman during one of the last big storms where his computer crashed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the power went out, the computer crashed. Power came back on, he rebooted, the computer was working away. And like half an hour later, the power went out again, and the computer crashed again.
Yeah.
And then it came back on, and he turned the computer back on and worked again. And then half an hour later, power went out again. And that time, the computer wouldn't turn back on.
Oh, yeah. It can only take so many hits. That's a major jolt to that circuit board. And it's not meant to do that. That's why, you know, UPSs are great.
Yep. And don't rely on a surge protector because surges are relatively uncommon. It's the brownouts and the failures, complete power
failure.
And
the other thing, though, that folks fall into the fallacy is, well, they got a surge protector on it. Great. And it popped one time. Once it pops, 9 out of 10 times, it's no longer a surge protector. It's just a big gang plug. Because it did what it was supposed to do for that one time. Unless you're getting a lot, you know, higher end one. Most surge protectors, you know, once they pop, they're done.
Yep.
And you got to go get a new one. Because the folks will get one and says, oh, surge protector, they're only spending, you know, $10-$15. That's done once it's done, and that's it.
Yeah, just call it a power strip.
Yeah,
it's not
it.
Really a surge
Go out
protector.
And spend $15 again until you get the next surge. And you're going to have a lot of gang plugs, but, you know, oh well.
That's right. And so you should always be aware that these things live or die in electricity. And you need to know that if your computer is important, if all you do is use it to play games and you can wait a day or two or, you know, a week or a month till you replace the machine and you can afford to replace the machine regularly, don't bother with UPS. Who cares?
Yeah.
But if you really want to keep your machine or if you've got a laptop and like my Chromebook, I get 9 hours off of this. So I can just unplug it and wait out the storm.
Well, that's why
laptops kind of have a UPS built in because there's already a battery.
Right.
That's why I'm seriously, you know, for the amount of stuff that I do on my desktop, I mean, I do love having the double screens, which I could still, if it's the Chromebook, does it have HDMI out?
It has HDMI out. I don't know if it does multiple. I've never paid attention to that. If it does multiple screens, that's a good question.
Thank you.
Probably.
That's a very good question. Probably. Chromebook multiple screens.
Presentation mode, at least.
Okay, hold on.
Yes, apparently you can. How interesting is that? Rotate and adjust your screen. Yes. Manage displays. You can mirror your display. You can send it across the split. Pretty cool. All right.
Just like
next...
a real PC.
Yeah, really. So that's
just like an actual computer.
That's why, like I say, I'm going to start looking more and more at a Chromebook for what I want to do, because like even my QuickBooks and everything else, my Quicken.
Well, you know, you can also get a Chrome box, which is just a little desktop box that hooks to your current monitor, keyboard, and mouse, and is a Chromebook for your desk. It's not a laptop.
Right. No, I want a laptop.
Well, but you can also do that, is all I'm saying.
Yep.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Cheap.
Tawaga.
Welcome, Joe. What's up?
Well, mentioning power and power backup, I've seen a little bit about the Tesla Powerwall. That looks pretty intriguing. That's a system where they get a high-performance battery, a fairly beefy one, that they would use ordinarily in the Tesla electric cars, but that's tied to the grid. So basically the initial idea of it was that you could charge up the battery at night when the electricity is cheap and use it at night when the electricity is expensive to sort of level out the load. And as you can imagine, if the power fails, sounds to me like that would kind of operate like a UPS. Plus, you can tie solar panels to it, so you know you can reduce your electricity load on the grid even further.
Right, right. They ain't cheap, though.
Oh no, no, they definitely are not. And I'm not sure if they're in production yet either. They were taking pre-orders for it.
Yeah.
One of the other things you mentioned before, yes, I am on Fios. We're talking over VoIP over Fios right now. It's a wonderful thing. I have unfortunately yet to see a way to get Windows to play with Linux easily as far as the real time clock goes. I found I've had only two options: tell Windows to use universal time, or to do the less preferred thing is under Linux, say, hey, your clock is in local time. Unfortunately, they just don't play well together for that.
Yeah. No, I've not noticed an issue. I tell both of them that the clock is the hardware clock is local time, and they both seem to be fine with it.
Yeah, I think that would account for the four-hour difference the other caller was seeing, because right now during summertime, the offset between UTC and local would be 4, whereas in the winter it would be 5. Right. So I imagine, you know, if we come November, December, this guy would see a five-hour difference in his system.
Yep, I agree with you. I think, however, that setting the local time zone solves the problem. Keep the machine in UTC if you want to, or set the machine to local time, but make sure that you've set your time zone in each of your operating systems to the local time zone. You should be fine. I know.
That's
I am
true.
When I dual boot one of my other machines, I've only got one version of Linux on it, but it and Windows 7, but it keeps the correct time for both.
There is a specific setting, though, and it's depending on your distribution of Linux, it's kept in different files, like Red Hat derivatives, it would be, et cetera, sysconfig clock or something like that, where it says UTC in all capital letters equals Y or N or something like that, and it says, you know, is your local hardware clock. And but other than that, yeah, you should be able to get along just fine. Even better idea, if you have the resources on your computer, though, run Windows in a virtual machine, and then you can tell the virtual machine, hey, fake the clock for this time or the other time, plus you get to run the other operating system. There's some things you can't do with that. Games, for performance reasons, is a good example.
Yep, I get it. Thanks.
Thank you for your time.
Yep, thanks. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 40 minutes after the hour. Soundbites and member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
That one skip.
Yeah, it makes me crazy. Welcome back, everybody. Crazier. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Edwin.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Before we get back to the phones, however, I do want to say a couple of things about security. I think it's important to note there's another reason to upgrade that old Windows PC. Microsoft has now stopped providing antivirus signatures for XP. They are not even updating security anymore for XP.
They did too much for it to begin with.
Well, exactly right. But they're doing nothing now. And that's important. The other thing is we've had a lot of people talking about how Microsoft said that the life... they would support Windows 10 for the lifetime of the device. We now know that lifetime is 5 years. Microsoft has just updated the Windows support cycle, the Windows life cycle fact sheet, and Windows 10 will be supported in mainstream. That's what you get in support until 2020, and then extended support, which is security updates. And you can pay for support if you're an organization till 2025. So it looks like I don't care how long you keep your device. Microsoft doesn't care how long you keep your device. The lifetime of the device is now 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So and now we know that. All right. And if you want to, you can also read that off of my website, AskNick.com. That's the major headline right at the moment. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Bert from Palmyra, New York. Hiya, Bert. What's up?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
In your talk about security and locking down Wi-Fi routers and stuff like that, I think the biggest problem is education. Even young kids getting online, using their cell phones, on and on, they're really not being educated, let alone old users like myself. Nobody's getting actually educated on how to handle security and what to do about it.
Right.
You guys make a marvelous attempt at it, but you're on a radio station that very few people listen to and is really hard to tune in at any distance from the city. It's a tough situation. It's odd. I don't know what the solution is, but people need to be taught better.
Well, the only solution we have available is to keep screaming at it, people.
Yeah, that's all we can do. And, you know, we post, you know, like you say, maybe folks can't listen to us live, but every show is up there for folks to download and listen at their discretion.
Yep.
So, you know, they can keep up to date on that. I mean, we've got thousands of people all over the world that download our podcast each week.
Excellent.
Also, of course, you can listen on the... live stream, which is pretty well full right now, but you can also listen, watch us live on YouTube.
That's scarier, yeah, but...
Yeah.
And every time the next big security flaw hits the public news, people are becoming more and more aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
yeah.
Unfortunately, through bad effects, but at least they're becoming aware of it.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But people, Bert, people are complacent.
Yeah, yeah.
They think, well, I don't have anything worth stealing, so it's not going to happen to me. Yeah, it can.
Yeah. Ho, ho, ho.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate your time.
Okay, Bert,
thanks,
take
Bert,
care.
Keep smiling.
Yep. Makes folks wonder what you're up to.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, we have, it's a real problem. And Bert is absolutely right.
Yeah.
People buy machines and don't bother. I can't tell you how many machines when I'm on the RIT campus, if I look to see who's sharing their hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
Many, many people are doing it. And Apple has gotten better about making it
off by default.
Off by default, but it didn't used to be that way. And a lot of people turn it on because it makes it easier to share music and movies with their friends.
Exactly.
Or even they get out on the public internet and they leave it on.
Yeah. Even just between your own desktop and laptop.
Right.
But then you forget again, and on the public internet, you go to Starbucks and suddenly everyone can see your hard drive.
Yeah.
Right. And take whatever they want off it and sometimes add whatever they want to it.
Yeah.
It's scary. You know what I mean? Because your personal information, you know, it could be banking or whatever. And it's sitting there and you're just inviting the whole world in. And it's like.
And then sometimes, in fact, most of the time, it isn't you the bad guys are after. It's a machine
to help hide them. Like I said, setting up the security. I could sit there and go up to a lot of houses and get into their network. And, well, you know, like I say, illegally downloading movies or worse stuff.
Yeah.
Your imagination can go wild there. And yes, you will get blamed for it.
Right.
And there have been a few cases where people were almost ready to go to jail. And like Steve said, they just come in, you're guilty until proven innocent in this case. And some of these crimes out there, they just come in, take your stuff, that's it. And you got to then prove that it wasn't you. And I had one friend that did, you know, because, and he admitted, you go ahead and look, you know, here's the three computers I have in the house. And yes, we didn't lock down the system. Our bad.
Yep, yep, yep.
But you know what? You got to take the time to do it because otherwise you're going to get hosed. It's just plain and simple fact that, you know, you're going to get blamed for it.
We used to joke about plausible deniability. If your network is open and it wasn't me. Well, that doesn't really help much when the police confiscate all of your computers to find out if it was you.
Mm-hmm. Right. And they've got the tools to do it. I mean, the forensic lab, you know,
it's a program called CASE that's kind of amazing.
Yeah, and it is unbelievable.
And if you don't have a receipt for every piece of music on your computer or every movie on your computer.
Yeah, you're guilty. And that's just the way it is. I mean, sad, but oh well.
Yep. Oh yeah, it's become more important to pay attention to. And there's just so many rules. And so many laws. I get why people ignore it. But you know what? You ignore it at your own peril.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't really need to wear my seatbelt, or I don't really need to get a driver's license. I mean, that's just a pain in the neck, so I'm not going to bother to do it. Well, and then you get pulled over, and now you're in jail.
Yeah. Or they get caught without driving with insurance or anything else.
Yep, yep. It's a real issue that we face in terms of the computer world. It's a real issue that we face when it comes to keeping our machines secure, but we really have to spend the time to do it. Oh. It's another reason that I like the Chromebook, because it is inherently more secure.
Talking about, you know, technology's changing and everything else, I saw just so about maybe a month ago, down at Shalott, they go through these police cars now can go through a parking lot, and they've got the cameras. And as fast as they can drive up and down the different lanes, it scans to let them know whether the registration is current, insurance, or if they've got outstanding tickets. And it spits it out there on the screen for them. My friend there showed it to me, and it's like, wow.
Yep.
And that's what they can do. They can just travel around and, you know, nail people. Because the technology, and this is, I mean, moving along at a good clip. This is not moving along, you know, 5-10 miles an hour. No, they can be moving along in their cruiser, you know, 25-30 miles an hour, and it's sitting there scanning hundreds of cars and hitting that database that fast and coming back with the hits. And it's like, whoa.
Yep. Yep. That's exactly how it works.
Yeah.
It's the amazing things that technology can do these days. Happens so fast, the changes are so fast that it's we're kind of living in a science fiction world.
Well, it's just the other thing too is that's changed greatly that we can all relate to. Is now we can pick up our smartphone and go, okay, Google, mm-hmm. and speak into it. And it understands us. Before, there was Dragon Speak, and you know, you had to teach the thing to do it. And now you can sit there on your smartphone, pick up any app, speak into it, and it'll type out your whole message for you.
Yep.
And then you just hit the send button. You don't have to touch a key.
I forget what it was I was looking for this morning, but I was doing a crossword puzzle, and I was so stumped on this one thing. I asked Google about it, and I thought, it's never going to get this right. And it got it.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember what it was off the top of my head, but I remember being kind of shocked that it actually figured that out and got it and did it. The voice recognition stuff is getting so much better.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Cortana's coming out now for Android as well. Siri, of course, on the iPhones Google on the Android phones. Cortana on the Microsoft phones. They're all doing fairly much the same thing, better, worse, whatever, who cares. But they're basically doing the same thing, and a lot of it has to do with natural speech recognition, which used to be a very hard thing to handle and is now getting to be much easier. All right, listen, that music tells us that we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to all those of you on the line to whom we did not get. Really, you have to call in earlier next week. We really can't take a call at like 2 minutes to the end of the show. But listen, don't go away, because George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow. So unless you're in a big hurry to get somewhere else, you keep that radio tuned to this station. We'll be back next week with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco. It's the longest-running computer show in the known and unknown universe. It's Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.